Of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Welcome, everybody. We're back for another episode of Greenwich Streets. I'm Russell Pruner. With me, as usual, is my co-host and brother, Mark Pruner. We're both realtors here in Greenwich working at Compass Real Estate. We try to bring you each week sort of the status of the real estate market and then talk about different topics that we've learned about here in Greenwich. Mark, how was your weekend?
It was good. It was a relatively quiet weekend in the real estate business. It was the Super Bowl, which as of today is officially the beginning of the spring market. So we're hoping we're going to get a lot more inventory. Last week, we actually ticked up two new listings over the previous week. So that's up 20%, but we still need a lot of listings.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, it's just been such an odd time in the last couple of spring markets. And, you know, I think it's going to take maybe through 24 spring market, maybe even to, we'll see how this market goes. But tremendous demand out in the market right now, and you know, people are snapping houses up as they hit the market.
Well, and I think we need to be clear. They're snapping up houses like yours, which are beautiful houses that have been recently redone with new kitchens with open floor plans. The higher interest rates have affected the Greenwich market. We've got people looking, but they're not really snapping up the older houses that need work like they were back in this time last year, what I called the frenzy, because you could put anything on and it would sell.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's still going, you know, seeing that go in that direction again. I mean, I think the houses that are out there right now, as we've talked about, aren't reflecting properly the condition and location you know, that they're in. A lot of them, you know, above that $10 million mark, you know, they're so unique in many ways because the owner built them or renovated them in that way. And, you know, we're going to, you got to go find the right person or the clone of the person that owns the house that, you know, will come forward and really, you know, look at buying the home.
Yeah, no, that is what makes it tough. I mean, you get a pyramid of buyers. The lower you go down on the pyramid, the lower the price they can afford, the much broader the base. As you get down under $1.5 million, and particularly under $1 million, at the same time, that's where we have limited inventory because stuff goes off so quickly. As you get up towards the top of the pyramid, the number of people who can afford an $8, $10, or $20 million house, or in the case of Copper Beach Farm, $150 million house is smaller.
Exactly, and you know, and also the big thing is more people can afford the less expensive homes than the more expensive homes. You know, we are going in, I think, two crucial times right now in the market. One we normally see every year is when the notices come out about whether kids got in. You know, Greenwich Country Day and the Academy.
Yeah, how much do you think that really drives the market?
I think there's a blip there that, you know, does.
I think at the high end, you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, because our market is smaller.
Yeah, and, you know, it's, you know, maybe not be over $10 million, but, you know, in that $5 to $10 million range. I mean, I know there have been people out there that have been looking, but they're sort of waiting to make sure that their children get into a private school. And once they do, we do see a little blip there for right. About a week to, you know, 30 days of people wanting to, you know, move forward with the purchase of a home.
If the opposite of a one-week blip is a one-week bloop, we may have a bloop coming up because we've got the public and private school vacations back-to-back. And that always slows things down a little bit, which may be why we see a blip up of inventory coming on as we see more as we see slightly fewer people out there in the market. I don't think you're going to see that right now. There are lots of people picking over what's out there and what comes on.
Yeah. Let's change the subject for a minute. You know, this another time of year that happens every year, which I think a lot of people don't know about, is that if you had your house reevaluated for, you know, in the last revaluation and you missed last year's opportunity to go and contest that. Aren't you, you being the chairman of the revaluation committee, are you starting to see people come back in and contest those revaluations?
Well, so I'm chairman of the Board of Assessment Appeals. We look at, we review the assessments in town and see whether the assessor got it right. Our job is to set your assessment, if you appeal, at fair market value. So generally people appeal when they think their properties are over-assessed. This year, the filings are down significantly, and I think I know why. Yeah, it's been, you've got until next Monday, the 21st, to file your appeal if you want to appeal the property tax assessment you got from the tax assessor.
How long, Mark, you know, they've got to file by the end of next week, but how long do those reviews go on for?
So what happens is the filing period is February 1st to February 21st, and then normally we would start the beginning of March, but we had a couple of our members who couldn't make the first week in March, so we're going to start the hearings on March 6th. You come in, you present your evidence, you've got 20 minutes to do so. And, you know, we look it over and then get together as a group and make a decision.
Yeah, one of the things, am I not correct in the fact not only can the revaluation or reassessment of your property go up as well as down, correct?
Yeah, so our job is to guess what the fair market value, or guess, is to look at the comps, look at the market, and set what we think is the fair market value. The assessor has a really tough job. She's got over 20,000 properties that she's got to value, and there can be things like wetlands or long skinny properties or things that are up against highways. She has adjustment factors for many of those, but any of the ones that the Board of Assessment Appeals put on that go forward, they've generally taken off because there may have been a change of fact.
Yeah, let's clarify for people a little bit that the comparables that you use in the reevaluation actually are not today's comparables, correct? Aren't they
right.
Sort of that's, ones that are
I think
older?
That's one of the reasons we're not seeing as many appeals this year as we did last year, because we've had a real jump up in property values. So people are looking at the assessment. And by the way, the assessment is 70% of fair market value. So if you've got a house that's worth $1 million, the assessment is going to be $700,000. The other thing about that assessment, as Russ said, is that assessment is done on October 1st, 2021, and this will be carried forward through 2025. So because prices have gone up, many people seem to think that they're underassessed, but that's the question is, how much was your house worth on October 1st of 2021? And if things have gone up 8 or 10%, that's not relevant when it comes to the assessment.
Yeah, let's talk for a second about if somebody decides to appeal their assessed value or their true value, whatever it might be, and they then what is the best evidence of value that you guys like to see from a standpoint of your review of the property?
Yeah, so a couple things on that when it comes to the actual hearing. You're allowed to have anybody you want represent you, not only an attorney or an appraiser, but you can have your cousin, you can have your kids, And we do a few Zoom hearings for people who can't physically make it, but you're a lot better off. But what you want to bring are comps of similar-sized houses with similar acreage, similar styles, sold around October 1st, 2021, not February 2023. So those, in most cases, are going to be lower. So those are the comps you need to look at.
And in that case, the best evidence of of that might be an appraisal from an appraiser licensed in the state of Connecticut?
That, you know, when we get a professional appraiser coming in, we generally know their reputations. Most of them are very good. And when they say they believe this is what the value was on October 1st, 2021, it's kind of like, well, why isn't that the case? Because this is a professional. That's all they do is come up with values.
Yeah, in the case of the people that are reassessed, what's the state law as to how often you can do that reassessment within the town?
Well, so the tax assessor creates a new grand list every year. If nothing's changed on your property, they carry forward the value from October 1st, 2021. If you put an addition on, then your value is going to go up. God forbid your house burned down, your value will go down. It's what the condition of the property is October 1st, in this case, 2022. For the grand list, and that will apply to your taxes in July of this year.
Can I ask a question?
Sure. Yeah.
What happens if something happens, say, on the street you live where it has to be dug up for some reason? Does that, and it would be temporary, obviously.
Right.
It would be fixed, and then the house would go back to the property value it had before. But for at least a year, say.
Yeah, in general, temporary items we ignore. If it's something that is going to change it, but let's say the street was being dug up to put sewers in.
Mm.
Houses with sewers are worth more than houses on septic.
Right.
That might actually result in an increase, but it won't result in an increase until the next revaluation, which will be as of October 1st, 2025.
Let me ask you one other question. If I go, I'm on Pond Place in Koskop. If someone on my street goes and you guys realize that maybe the whole street was undervalued, would you just raise my taxes or valuation, or could you go and raise everybody else's on the street?
Technically, we have the legal authority to do that. However, I've been doing this now for about 5 years. The third appeal I ever had was this very feisty woman who came in from Chickahominy. And gave me her evidence, and I'm looking at it, and I said, aren't you at 34? And she said, yes. And I go, well, everything you've given me is for 36. And he goes, yeah, that guy's a jerk. He blows these leaves on my property in the fall. He blows the snow in the winter, and he plays music loud in the summer. And he's underappraised. And I said, you know, unfortunately, without him here to hear both sides, we can't do that. However, we do have the authority, and we did do this last year. Guy bought a property for $1.5 million in September of 21. The assessor had him at $1.35 million, and he wanted $1.2 million. And we asked him. He said, I just overpaid. I just think it should be $300,000 less. We actually raised his assessment $25,000.
So, yeah, it can go up as well as go down. So it's worth, you know, one of the things I also say, too, is that, you know, if you're going to go and appeal, I mean, we do this every day. And oftentimes around revaluation times, we'll get a client that will call and say, hey, do you think this is fair? And we can quickly, through looking at comparables, give them the advice of whether to appeal or not. You know, how they appeal is a different story.
Yeah, now Russ unfortunately has been pushed out being my brother of handling a bunch of these. But one of these days I'll get off and Russ can go back to handling a bunch of appeals.
Yeah, no, we'll see how that goes down the road.
Yeah. One thing to note is that you need to get in by the 21st. If you buy a house during the between the reval windows, unlike New York State, we do not increase the price of the house to your purchase price. At the same time, if you bought it below the assessment, that's actually evidence that possibly the assessment was too high, because generally prices have been going up. So if it was $1 million appraisal, you bought it for $950 2 years after that, then you've got a decent argument that the $1 million appraisal in 21 might have been too high. So that is evidence, but all that has to be discounted so everybody has the same date of October 1, 2021.
We're going to take a short break here on Granite Streets, and we'll be back with more in a moment.
Rand Insurance has been part of the Greenwich community since 1938, and we're located next to the J House in Riverside. We've been helping successful individuals, families, and local businesses with their insurance needs for over 80 years. Contact the Rand experts for insurance for your home, cars, and business, as well as cyber insurance and coverage for your jewelry, wine collection, and vintage cars. Get in touch with us at 203-637-1006 or at randinsurance.com. Experience the Rand difference.
Hi, I'm Tony Savino. Join me Thursday mornings at 9 o'clock for Spotlight on Medicine. Each week I speak with the doctors, nurses, and other medical experts at Greenwich Hospital. This week on Spotlight, as part of Heart Month in February, diabetes and heart and stroke. What's the connection? My guests are Cheryl Feldheim, stroke program coordinator, and certified diabetes educator Nancy Ryan. That's Spotlight on Medicine Thursday mornings at 9 on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Welcome back to Greenwich Streets. I'm Russell Pruner. With me, as usual, is my brother, Mark Pruner. And, you know, we're really lucky today to have Deborah Mecki and Christopher Shields of the Greenwich Historical Society to chat with us a little bit about what's been going on over in Koskob in the historic district and, you know, what all are all the things that, you know, the Historical Society does here locally in town and all of that. So what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, is, you know, let's start with Deborah and then we'll go to Christopher. Deborah, why don't you give us a little bit of about your background and also a little bit about the background of the Historical Society.
Well, good morning, Mark and Russ. It's really a pleasure to be here on your program today. I'm Deborah Mecki, and I'm the executive director of the Greenwich Historical Society. I've actually been there, I think, over 26 years now.
Wow.
Came in 1996. Yeah, so it's been a real passion for me to be involved with this organization and to watch it grow from the original Bush Holly House historic building there in Koskob to its expanded campus today.
Yeah, you've done an incredible job. I mean, we had the realtor event that was we did for continuing education over there last year, and it's just amazing to go over and see the amount of new building and, you know, what you've done, you know, to the whole thing.
But the continuing education was on historic homes in Greenwich and styles and things like that, and it was kind of cool to be doing it in a historic barn. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, because you had mentioned it started with the Bush Holly House, and you now have an entire compound. You have an estate. What's there at the compound, and kind of how's that evolved?
Yeah, well, the Historical Society purchased the Bush Holly House from Constant Holly McCrae. She was the last resident of the house, and the highway I-95 was just being built at that time. And through the influences of local people, the highway was actually moved. That's why there's a big turn there that goes across the Mayanis River, avoids Bush Holly House. So to the pain of many people that have to slow down at that corner, yet we do have now this National Historic Landmark. What's really special about the site is that it was not only just a really classic mansion from the 18th century built around 1730, but that, and the Bush family lived there for 100 years, but that it was then purchased by the Holly family, who attracted artists, American Impressionist artists from New York, who came out and established an art colony, and it became a cradle of American Impressionism at the turn of the 20th century. So we have these multiple stories when you go there, and you really do need to come here and experience the site. It's the headquarters for the Greenwich Historical Society. So we're more than a historic house museum. We're about the history of our town through many, many different periods and times. And we have exhibition galleries, the library and archives, which Christopher manages, a research department. We have education programs. Every school in Greenwich comes through the Bush Holly House in the third grade. And multiple programs for middle school and high school students. So it's a very rich resource for our town, and it's been really a meaningful place to be involved in and watch grow.
Oh, that's great.
Talk about some of those things that you have seen grow there. So you now have a museum. You've got the large barn that we talked about. And then, so I, it was funny when you said Holly McRae, I thought, gee, it was named after their first name, but was that the old English tradition of naming people with other family members' last names become first names?
Well, she changed her name from Constant Holly to Constant McRae. But we refer to her as Constant Holly McRae because the Holly house was owned by her parents. And while she was growing up there, she met the artist Elmer McRae, who, you know, and so the, one of the reasons why we have this wonderful legacy of an art colony there is because she, as the daughter of the Hollies, carried on the tradition of hosting artists in their boarding house and in their barn where the artists would display their work. So it was partly that reason. Oh, cool. Yeah. And we have her diaries. And when, you know, she was a pack rat and a preservationist in her own right. So when Bush Holly House was acquired, we, the archives has a really outstanding collection of what we call the Holly McRae collection of her letters and diaries and journals, everything from the receipts when she bought fish from the local fishmonger, you know, to the records of the garden journals of Elmer, who attended to these heirloom vegetables that they grew on site and provided the household, you know, the boarding house included your board as well as your lodging. So that was part of what they provided there.
Yeah. Chris, let's go to you for a second and talk about the archives. I mean, it's been amazing throughout my career how you can go and research properties and find out a lot of the history of what's there. Can you give the listeners a little idea of sort of what your job is at the Historical Society and all of that?
My job is basically to answer any question that gets asked. and we are fortunate. We have a fantastic collection. It has a little bit of everything. We have manuscript materials. We have records of local businesses. We have records from government committees, photographs, maps. So, I mean, it's a tremendous resource. And I've been there since 2011. And ever since I started, I was so impressed with just the variety of material that basically the residents of Greenwich have seen fit to entrust to the Historical Society because they know it's a place that's going to care for these records and make them accessible. So it's a great, it's just a fantastic resource. The top two types of research requests that we get are genealogical requests, and they can be from people who are local, but also from people who live in Wisconsin, but they found out from Ancestry that they had relatives that lived in this area, you know, in the 17th, 18th century, 19th century. So that is very interesting. And then, of course, probably the top request we get is property. People want to know either more about their house or their neighborhood. And then we have a lot of material that can help answer those questions, everything from the records of real estate agencies that did business in Greenwich in the early part of the 20th century, and grand lists and maps. All of these things kind of are, give a little piece of the puzzle when people are trying to find out more about their community.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the photos, because if you go over to the Ginger Man, they have photos of Greenwich Avenue. I know when we were doing a restaurant, Backcountry Barbecue, you had photographs of golfers from the 19th century. So, yeah, what's your photo archive like? And if somebody wants a or wants to research it or would like to purchase one of those, how do they go about that?
Well, again, we have, as far as photographs go, we have a little bit of everything. So, you know, everything from the people of Greenwich, different locations, houses, you name it, we've got it. And you'll also notice if you go onto our website, we have a digital collections portal. Mm. And we have thousands of photographs that have already been digitized and cataloged that people can search. And we're adding more every day. So I encourage people to go to our website and check that out. It's digital.greenwichhistory.org to get to the portal. If anybody sees something that they're interested in, either on the portal or if they want to come in or if they want to send me an email or give me a call, tell me what they're looking for a small fee, we can get them a high-resolution photograph that they can reproduce.
Yes, and some of them are amazing photos, and what's really great about them is you zoom in, and you just see the type of toy that the little girl on the street was playing with or all sorts of things. There are some amazing resolution, those old cameras with those big plates with the guy with the curtain over his head took
Absolutely.
Some really good photos.
Absolutely. And what I love to see in those photographs is when you see signs in the store windows that tell you a little bit more about what they're selling and what the price is. Or these are the little clues that people like me live for.
Yeah, so. let me ask you a question, Christopher or Deb, or either one. How often do people walk in that maybe have sold a property their parents have lived in for 60 years and bring you, you know, their treasures from those properties?
It happens quite often.
Really?
I mean, I would say the bulk of the collection has been through former residents of Greenwich or current residents of Greenwich who are clearing out, you know, a parent's or a grandparent's home. So we're always happy to see, you know, what they bring in and determine whether or not the material, you know, is appropriate for our collection. But we're really indebted to the people who have thought of the Historical Society because it's what's made our collection so diverse and so rich.
Is there any one thing that sort of surprised you, or is there anything that you can think of that was one of those moments like, I can't believe that somebody has a photograph or a manuscript of something here in Greenwich?
One thing that comes to mind recently, I say recently, it was probably 5 or 6 years ago, but somebody was clearing an estate and they found this amazing collection of diaries that were kept by a young woman during the World War I era. And they give such insight into what was going on in the town, the thoughts of a young, very intelligent young woman, beautifully written, just a remarkable resource. And if it wasn't for the care and attention of this person who is working with this material, said, you know, this is something that doesn't belong in the dump. You know, we got to get this to the Historical Society. So that is very, very exciting when you see something like that happen. And it happens, in my experience, it happens more often than not. So
yeah, like my wife's family grew up in the Thomas Higgins house on Greenwich Avenue, and they have about 40 years of diaries of two people overlapping from like 1840 to 1885. And those are interesting just to see what their day-to-day activities were.
Exactly. Deborah, what can you give our listeners a little idea of, you know, what type of programs and activities that you're offering right now at the Bush Holly House?
Well, sure. Well, this is Black History Month, as we all know. So we do have some special programs in recognition of that. We debuted a documentary on Worthy Patterson. Mm-hmm. He is UConn's first NBA player. And he died at the age of 91, I think a year ago, just before the documentary was... just before the documentary was completed. But he's a real inspiration. He's still remembered in Greenwich. He grew up in Greenwich. He went on to excel in sports and business despite facing discrimination and racism. I grew up in a single family household. His mother was a tailor. And he got his start at the Boys Club, which was then the Boys Club. When he tried to go to the YMCA, he was not allowed because he was Black. And his mother was a really, really strong woman, and she went out to advocate for that. So he actually and his brother were admitted to the YMCA, just to give you an idea of what it was like in the 1940s in Greenwich. So that's been a wonderful program, and it's going to probably be shown on CPTV at some point.
Oh, wow.
But we filmed the Q&A at the meeting, which was this past week. And it was with his wife, Queen, and his son, Worthy III. So there's some really unique, special stories that are told and given insight into his character. So that's been a type of program that we did just recently.
And then what do you have for, like, children and things like that? Because many times I go over there, and the whole place is full of families.
Well, we are every third grader in Greenwich comes through as part of the Sarah and Her Town education program. I mentioned that the Bushes lived there for 100 years, so they sort of study that Revolutionary War era when the Bush household had enslaved people, and we have a recreated slave quarter in the house, which is part of the education program that we offer. So you often see school buses pulling up and children unloading for that. But then we do special programs for middle school and high school students as well, and then we have a summer camp that we run.
One of the things that I remember, I think it was either this past fall or springtime, you do some outdoor concerts there at Bush Holly House, don't you?
Well, during the pandemic, when we were faced with people not really wanting to come to museums, and Bush Holly House, we actually had to close for a while. The rooms were small enough that people didn't feel safe inside. We began a concert series in the summer, which was so popular that we've continued it, and it will start again this June. And we also instituted what we call Tavern Garden Markets, which every other week, where there is beginning in May and June, there will be just vendors who come with fresh vegetables. And it kind of helps us introduce people to the beauty of that site, because it has four gardens in it. Yeah. Heirloom vegetable garden. It has herb, kind of a colonial herb garden. It has bulb gardens. It has just so a grape arbor and just a sense of
the interesting thing I thought is just the history of that particular area where the Bush Holly House is, because you've got the Strickland Historic District right around the corner, and then you have, just talk about some of the waterfront activities and the historic stuff, because we don't have that many historic districts in town.
Yes, well, the Historical Society not only acquired Bush Holly House, but it over time acquired the last three buildings that remained from the lower landing in Koskop. You know, in the 18th century, this was one of the major harbors for trade that went in and out of New York. And the farmers came down the Stamwich Road and Hillside towards to the grist mill that David Bush had the monopoly on, and to get their corn ground, and then in turn to have goods shipped in or shipped out from that harbor, such as apples and other potatoes and other produce. So it was a very busy harbor, and many of the buildings burned. The mill burned in 1899. And then now if you go there, it's a little town pocket park with a view out through the Koskop Harbor. And because the railroad bridge was built, it kind of silted up what was once a much deeper harbor with ships and sloops and, you know, schooners that you would see going in and out of there all the time. So it's a real taste of a time. And Strickland Road is still, as you say, it's a historic district. And you still can experience what it felt like to come down that road with these 18th century houses almost on the street. You don't even have a porch on some of them to walk out to get onto the road and down to the road to the grist mill to the Bush Holly site.
And then also right across the street is the Palmer Point, which used to be the home of the Palmer Brothers, which was a shipbuilding firm for many, many years. So that's very historic as well. So it is a lot of history there.
Yeah, you still have the water club with the ship channeler and some manufacturing going on there still to this day, just around the corner there on River Road. But as long as we were talking about grist mills, let's talk about my grist mill. Yeah. I think of it as my grist mill. I live in backcountry between Lake and Round Hill, and on Old Mill Road, there's the Sylvania Selleck grist mill, and I had to look up what a grist mill was because I'd never eaten any grist, and it just meant that they ground multiple types of grain. They would do wheat and corn and rye, and so because of the monopoly that was down in Koskop, this fellow built a grist mill up on Old Mill Road, just down, and it's actually a little bit older than the Round Hill store, so we think it's the oldest commercial building. I was in there last week because it definitely needs some work. The Historical Society has been great to put up a page with information, and the Stu family has, the son has done a great video that you can see there, and we'll be raising some funds to save that grist mill, because it's one of only two left. Unfortunately, the grist mill down in Koskop is now gone.
Yeah, so 1796, I believe, is the date that Selleck mill dates to, and it's one of really very few grist mills that survive in Connecticut. So it's a great landmark. It's on private property, which is part of the challenge of seeing it preserved, but it has a deed restriction on it, which requires the owner to maintain the facade of the mill, and thanks to Mark Pruner and the Stubbe family, and Will Keyes of the Land Trust and the Historical Society, a group has been formed called the Friends of Selleck Mill, to help raise funds to do first an engineering study and then obviously stabilization on the building so that it doesn't get further deteriorate.
So we were out with the engineer last week, and there's a lot of stabilization that needs to be done. There's one 12 by 12 chestnut beam that's literally being held up by 2 1-by-6 boards. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we will be back with the folks from the Greenwich Historical Society, Chris Shields and Deborah Mackey. Thank you.
Balance of Nature is fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
I'm in the medical field, and I think when you start out these things, you know, everything from the advertisement sounds so good that you're psyched up for it to work. It's working. Anyway, I'm happy.
Balance of Nature has made a big difference. It's just one of the greatest products, and it's just so simple, and it works.
Balance of Nature is a fantastic product. You could tell it's real. You could taste it. And it gives you really good energy, and it's just right up there with rent, electric cable, like things that you have to have. I'm not cutting Balance of Nature. No, I love it.
Start your journey to better health with Balance of Nature right now. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com for more information or to place your order. Shipping is always free. And don't forget to get 35% off your first order as a preferred customer by using discount code Laura.
Welcome back to Greenwich Streets. I'm Russell Pruner. With me, as usual, is my brother Mark. And we have with us today Deborah Mackey, the Executive Director of the Greenwich Historical Society, and Christopher Shields, who runs the archives and really, you know, knows probably more than anybody else about the history of Greenwich. You know, one of the great things about having a historical society in town is really the fact that those that want to learn about the history of Greenwich can do that. If somebody was coming to the Historical Society, you know, what type of programs could they expect that you guys would be, you know, having now?
In fact, let's talk about your plaquing program, because as realtors, we regularly go into houses that have one of the Greenwich Historical Society plaques on them.
Well, the Greenwich Historical Society started today it's called the Greenwich Landmarks Recognition Program. It started back in 1987. At the time, it was called Signs of the Times. Mm. And basically, it was a recognition that there were so many wonderful historic homes in Greenwich. And over time, they were being lost to development. So they wanted a way to focus on the history and honor the people who acquired these homes and very sensitively updated them and made them a real home that they could be comfortable in the present day. So since that time, we've recognized over 300 structures. Not all of them are homes, most of them are, but over 300 structures throughout Greenwich. And it's a program that is still very much appreciated, and we have an annual event where the Historical Society recognizes usually between 3 and 5 structures. The way it usually works is we have a jury that works to determine whether or not a home would qualify. We follow the National Register's conditions for whether or not something would be included in the program. One of those things is it has to be over 50 years old, unless there's something exceptional about the property. But the way we determine what is going to be recognized is people usually approach us and say, listen, I have this wonderful home that I've maintained, and the updates I've done, you know, have been sensitive to the history of the structure. And we add it to a prospect list, and then we have the jury evaluate, you know, homes for each annual event. And sometimes what we try to do is we try to tie it into an exhibit that we have on site. So this year we're going to be trying to focus on homes that have some connection to sports or athletics, because we're going to have a wonderful exhibit beginning in March called...
Sports more than just a game.
More than just a game. So we kind of like, because it gives kind of a synergy, and it just kind of builds out the story that we're telling in the gallery that way. So if anybody's interested, you know, feel free to contact me and we can talk more about.
So,
you know,
one of the things that's always raised by homeowners, because I've sold 3 plaqued houses, and I'm sure Russ has sold many more, is what does it mean, and does it mean I can't change my home? Or that no one can tear the house down?
Absolutely not. It's just an educational program. It doesn't put any restrictions on what a homeowner can do. It's really just a way to capture information about the home. Every time we recognize a home, we do title research. We write up a wonderful piece about not only the structure, but also usually about the people who live there over time. So it's nothing that people have to worry about in terms of what they can do with their property. It's only a plus, I would say.
From a realtor's viewpoint, yeah, you're exactly right. It is only a plus because we now have a story to tell to buyers that come in, to tell them about this wonderful house and the history that, and the history that they will be buying.
And I will say that most of the requests that I get having to do with properties come from people who are marketing a property, and they really do want to know that historical story.
In fact, I have one for you right after the
show. Deborah, what? Give us an idea of sort of what's coming up at the Historical Society, and you know, what can people expect this year?
Well, let me just start out by saying that you don't need to be a member to come to the Historical Society. We are, while we're a private nonprofit, we are open and have access to everyone. We're free the first Wednesday of every month. We're actually there 7 days a week. Mm. I have a museum store with wonderful items in it. And
the library and archives is open on Wednesdays to the public, 10 to 4, or by appointment.
It's a cool place just to go down
and see. So it's just a cool place to come check out. Go have a cup, come and have a cup of coffee and meet us, for one thing. We obviously, we invite people to be members. We have 1,000 members and donors right now. We'd love to double that. And there's it's a low bar to become a member for $50. You're a member, and you get discounts on programs, and you're free to our wonderful openings of new exhibitions. Christopher mentioned our next we just closed the exhibition on John Henry Twachtman, the artist who lived here in Greenwich in a home that also had once been the home of Jim Henson. It's a storied place. Storied place, and an amazing art exhibition. In March, we're opening Sports More Than Just a Game. And that is
that's going to be huge because two different people I know are preparing material for that. One guy I play tennis with, and another guy I know who's a big golfer and historian.
You're going to be amazed when you come to that exhibit and see what's in there. And then both local people and going back to people that, you know, are no longer in Greenwich, but were great stars in their day, who will be featured in that. And we're also, you know, having a series of public programs. So that'll open in March, and members are free to those receptions. They're great times to get to see, meet other members, and enjoy what the Historical Society has to offer. We'll roll out a series of programs along that theme. The Indigenous Roots of La Crosse will be one of programs we'll do in March. We're going to have an afternoon in the archives. Christopher will pull out all of the sports memorabilia that we have there. And we're going to have a book talk on Jackie Robinson.
Who lived in Stamford. I read his biography. Yeah.
And this is a new book that really focuses in on a particular period of his life by author Kostya Kennedy. In the spring, we try to come back to the theme of our gardens, and we'll have a program called Artful Arrangements, which is a floral workshop with Tricia Sullivan. Those have been very popular, and we have those periodically in honor of Constant Holly McRae, because she was an award-winning designer of floral displays, and many people in Greenwich had them done by her. And then the Tavern Garden Markets, which we talked about, will come back in May and June. And new this year is a sort of our new recreation of what used to be the Holiday House Tour, our major fundraising event that was part of Antiquarius. And this year it's going to be in the spring on June 1st. It's a celebration of outdoor entertaining landscape and garden design.
Oh, wow.
So it's for those who, we trying to use more of the outdoors and bridge this gap right now of people that don't want to open their homes fully to the public yet, coming out of the pandemic. So
we've cool outdoors, I can tell you.
We have some really cool places.
As a realtor.
On this tour, you'll be delighted to see what we're going to be doing with that program. And, you know, and then we'll come back in the summer with rolling out Discover Greenwich. We're going to do another townwide scavenger hunt. And this year we're going to look at landmarks relating to sports and athletic history. So, and tours of different neighborhoods in town. So it's a wonderful organization. We need your support. We are a private nonprofit. Right. We don't receive funds from the town of Greenwich. And yet we are
very successful.
Talk
a little bit about the website and how you can join as a member there and what you can find on the website. Chris had mentioned the photos.
So our website, greenwichhistory.org, has an events calendar. It has a support us function, which is where you find the membership information and some information about special events. There's a portal to get into our library and archives to access that online or find out more about research that we've done. There's our exhibitions are featured on there, including the past one. So if you do want to see more about the Twachtman exhibit, which is no longer there, you can still go online and find that.
Well, we also have a section called History from Home, which are basically kind of like blog postings about various topics about the history of Greenwich. It kind of got its start during the pandemic, but it's really something that it's fun for the staff to explore some of the collections and kind of tell these stories, and then invite people in to come look at the materials. So.
And because this is Valentine's Day, well, the one that just got posted is about the love story of Elmer McCrae and Constant Holly, which is a fun.
So
a fun
can you give us some highlights of that? I'm not familiar with their love story.
Well,
we've got a lot of letters.
There's a lot of letters that are, during their courting period. They wrote he was in New York and she was here in Greenwich at her parents' home. And so there are many, many little love missiles back and forth. But the one I love was the one in which he's thanking her for serving as a model for his portraits. He was doing portraits at the time. And she said, oh, I'll do anything for you, Elmer, even if you want me to stand on my head.
But there are no paintings of her on her head.
No, there aren't.
Exactly.
It could be in somebody's attic. We'll have to see. Maybe it'll come in.
Will, actually, Christopher, I'm a big golfer in town and have been since I was very young.
Russ could be in there. He won his first
is there anything
golf
about,
tournament in like
about
1962.
Like a Greenwich Country Club or Innes Arden that were both pre-1900 golf courses?
We have material related to pretty much all the clubs in town. I'm sure we have some material going back related to golf, and I guess you'll be donating some of your material to us too.
Yeah, actually, we have a book
now over 50 years old.
Yeah, I mean, actually, one of our members wrote the first 100 years when Innes Arden actually started. You know, it was Mr. Todd's mansion,
absolutely,
on Greenwich Point, and we have as our logo the gates from Innes Arden, which was his. You know, down at the Greenwich Point on our first tee, which is...
In fact, if you go down to Greenwich Point and look in the woods, you can see where the smaller diameter trees are, where the old fairways were for that nine-hole course.
Yeah, exactly. And I never knew. I mean, I always thought that the gates were, you know, at the far end of the beach as you go in with the big two pillars that get really tight. But they were actually up by the gatehouse, from what I understand, you know, more on Todd's Driftway. Because you can see where they, you know, actually where they were originally there. So, you know, it's always been great to know that started on Greenwich Point.
Actually, that was a part of historic Greenwich that I miss, is it used to be right after the ticket booth, there was this building that was like maybe 15 feet high that had a walkway around it. And it was an observatory in World War II to look for submarines in Long Island Sound.
We have a photograph of that.
Yeah.
And then the bathhouse. I mean, I think they've done, the conservancy for Greenwich Point has done a great job in restoring. I think they're in the process of doing the bell tower now.
Yes, they are.
Over by the yacht club clubhouse, I guess it would be.
Yeah.
And, you know, and doing the education that they do down there with the kids like you all do at the Historical Society to teach kids sort of a little bit about, you know, what's going on in Long Island Sound and the species of fish and shells and all of that.
Yeah, in fact, let's talk a little bit about the universe of historic preservation groups in town, because we've got the town has a historic district commission. You all are the Greenwich Historical Society. There is the Greenwich Historic Trust Fund. There's a Greenwich Historic Preservation Network that I serve on. And then how do you interact with those and other groups?
Well, I think preservation is something that can never be owned by any one organization. Properties are private, properties are public, and properties are owned by various residents. So there's got to be, and neighborhoods care a lot about properties in their own neighborhoods. So there's have to be a mix of people that come together around certain initiatives. Greenwich Point Conservancy is just a model of what can be done. That's a public-private partnership. All the buildings are owned by the town. But privately, they've been able to raise funds to really restore those buildings and they're just make them back accessible to people of the town. We're not a preservation organization. We're a history organization. We're preserving records and places that we own in Greenwich. So in order to help facilitate preservation townwide, we created a preservation network made up of all of the organizations, of those you mentioned, but including, for example, Historic Properties of Greenwich. Now, that's the most focused group that I know of that really wants to either commence you to put a deed restriction on your property, create a private property restriction. And there are several of these in town, and they've been successful, and they're working on one right now because they really believe that, you know, as time goes on, people don't preserve these buildings, and there's not much incentive to save them.
Well, and the nice thing is there is an incentive in the zoning code called a historic overlay. And if you have a historic property built before 1940, and it's discretionary with planning and zoning, if you've got a conforming lot, you can build a second house on it, or you get an additional 15 or 25% bump in your FAR if you agree to preserve the house in perpetuity. And that is the one time, unlike the placking, where you wouldn't be allowed to tear down the house, and that would go along with the house. But you get additional incentives to make the land more valuable.
The other way is to create a local historic district. Strickland Road is a local historic district. So getting put on the National Register does not protect the properties. But if you go through the process where 50% of the neighbors all agree to it, the Historic District Commission and the Historical Society can help you to get your neighborhood designated a local historic district.
You serve on the HDC, right?
No, I don't serve on the HDC. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Steve Bishop, is the head of the HDC. And those are appointed by the town selectmen. And they're commissions, and they are public.
Yeah, very similar to the Planning and Zoning Commission or Zoning Board of Appeals.
Yes. So the Planning Board of Appeals of Zoning Commission will refer items to the Historic District Commission that they want an opinion on. But if it's properties in a local historic district, the Historic District Commission's opinion rules. If it's not in a local historic district, it's up to, you know,
right.
to
but
the process.
But it is a great source of information officially from a town board to another town board, mm-hmm. so it does mm-hmm. carry more
yes.
legal weight.
Yeah, what are you most excited about for the coming year having to do with the Historical Society? I know there are a number of things. Are there things sort of on the drawing board that you're looking at doing also?
Well, when we did a strategic plan update this year, we embraced the theme of telling a fuller history of the town mm-hmm. to a broader audience. And I think that's where we would really like to get our programming. There are many stories that have not been told. Just take, for example, that there were 15 enslaved people living in Bush Alley House. We're actually focusing on doing much more research on them and working with schools to create witness stones that commemorate their presence here in town, and actually doing research to find the descendants. That's been very exciting.
Oh, that would be neat.
I was privy to one call where someone saw that we were doing this. They lived in Pennsylvania and called up because they were connected to a coal bush. The ancestor, they had never known where their ancestor lived. And as our youth and family program manager was talking to her on the phone, she just was so emotional, she dropped the phone and said to her husband, "We found our people."
Yeah.
There's some moments there that you just can't replicate. Right. Just yesterday, we were involved with the My Story, Our Future project, which is a collaboration with the India Cultural Center and the Asian American Studies program at UConn. And about 15 high school students of Asian descent, mostly Indian, did family histories. They were taught how to do an oral history, mm-hmm. and that will be available on our website.
Oh, that's great. Well, yeah, for those that have listened or may not have listened today, I mean, and really take a chance to go to our podcast, and you can hear a replay of all this. We can't thank you guys enough, Deborah Mecki and Christopher Shields, for coming in today and talking about the history of Greenwich, and we'll be back next week with more.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
This is your community radio station serving Lower Fairfield.